5X480, Dayton B100 V-Belt, one of the many parts Grainger carries. It's also the item that helped Rob carry the day. The job was on hold, deadline fast approaching, but a quick search on Grainger.com and Rob found his part. And with same-day pickup at his local branch, he and his crew got the job done, safely and on time. Get supplies and solutions for every industry with real-time product availability. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Karen is the proven expert in addiction treatment. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen, real results, real care, real about recovery.
Well, 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 welcome everyone. It's me, Javier Jase. I'm flying solo again, so you'll have to bear with me. You'll have to just stand me. Guess what? We're here to have fun. We're here to talk cannabis stocks. We're here to talk generally cannabis financing, cannabis money. Tell me in the chat, are you investing in cannabis stocks? If so, which are your favorite cannabis stocks? Also, did you know that Benzinga is hosting the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference next week in Miami Beach, April 20th and 21st, bzcannabis.com for more details. It'll be probably the best conference you've ever been to. It's just crazy. The speakers, the presenting companies, the scale, the expo floor, it's everything is just, you know, over the top. So you will definitely enjoy our conference. Make sure to get your tickets before they sell out. Let's get to some news before getting to our guest today. First one is a Benzinga exclusive. Polaris Equity Group completed a $77.3 million debt financing with Harborside. If you're interested, Harborside is HBORF on the OTC. You know, Polaris Equity provides real estate loans for cannabis businesses. They completed the second tranche of this debt financing with Harborside. Very, very interesting stuff. You can also catch Polaris at the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference next week. And you can ask Rob directly some of the questions that you might have about this. Other interesting news out of New Jersey. Finally, we are expecting to see adult use cannabis sales commence. Here are some ways I think, you know, we could play this, considering many of the treatment centers that are authorized are owned by multi-state operators that trade publicly. Some of the operators present in the Garden State are Acreage Holdings, which is ACRDF, Ascend Wellness, AAWH, Air Wellness, AYRWF, Columbia Care, CCHWF, Curaleaf, which is CURLF, Green Thumb Industries, GTBIF. You'll have to replay all this. Terrascend and Verano Holdings. Okay, just go look for, you know, just go look for the tickers. It's just too much investment data. None of this is advice, but it's great to know who is present in each market as they move to legalize, especially New Jersey, you know, given its size, its closeness to New York, and the expectation built around this massive market. Some other news, you know, just quick fire. Kyron opened a new clinic in pharmacy in Colombia. Organigram, which is OGI on the NASDAQ, posted record net revenue in Q2. It's still among the top operators in Canada. You have Curaleaf partnering up with WB Canada to bring its CBD and hemp products, select branded, to the Caribbean and other places in Latin America. I think that is probably about it. Some interesting stuff out of Philo. Philo will acquire Semasio or Semasio. I have no idea how to pronounce that. I assume Semasio to enhance data solutions. Go check out the article at benzinga.com/cannabis. Same to find out about Leaf Trade's most recent Series B financing round of $12.5 million. And finally, to answer this one question. If you had invested $1,000 into Canopy Growth, that is CGC, at its pandemic low, how much would you have now? The answer will surprise you. Well, I mean, if you're very involved in cannabis markets, probably not. If you hold Canopy Growth, you will probably not be surprised. You will know what has been going on. But if you don't, benzinga.com/cannabis. Here to talk more about cannabis funding is Judy Rinkus. She is the CEO of Seed2Sale Funding. They do cannabis financing. They've closed over 60 million in cannabis transactions since 2019. They write loans in over 40 states. The team boasts over 100 years of experience in the financial field. Judy, let's bring her up. Welcome to Benzinga Cannabis Insider.
Judy. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. Very happy to have you. Very excited to be talking cannabis financing here on Benzinga Cannabis Insider. Absolutely. Before we get started, tell us a little bit about Seed2Sale Funding.
So I founded Seed2Sale Funding about 3 years ago. Prior to that, I had been in commercial banking, left that industry, and really just found a need certainly in Michigan, which is where I'm located, for this kind of financing. And a lot driven by the fact that that commercial banks, for the most part, even now, are not really participating in this market in any big way. And but there are a number of private lenders out there who have a variety of different structures, but it's very difficult for the average borrower to sort of navigate through all of this, because it's not like you can Google some well-known national bank and just bring up their program, right? I mean, you have to go through just hoops and hoops to find out what you're looking for. And then a lot of these lenders really, they offer just one product, okay? So a lot of what we've spent time on is being able to bundle these products to be able to provide a one-stop shop for the borrowers, and do so in saving them a lot of time, a lot of heartache and headache, and really doubling or tripling their chance of getting a deal done.
One of the things that I really love about Seed2Sale Funding is you disclose every one of your deals, right? A lot of funds in cannabis and financing organizations out there are saying, oh, we did this, like we've closed these many million dollars in deals, and you ask them and they won't disclose it. They won't say how much they invested into certain stuff. You do. Can you tell us a little bit about the different deals that you've done, where, and I don't know, like the nature, some of the most interesting ones?
Sure. So like, as you mentioned, we've done over 60 million in transactions over the past 3 years. They vary in size from below a million to, you know, the largest closed transaction just recently was 11 million, and have a variety of, most of them are secured by real estate, but just recently we've been able to layer on some other term loans and some other financing products on top of the real estate. For example, if there's a shortage in, call it a down payment amount for the real estate, that kind of thing. And along those lines, so I'd like to kind of highlight, if this is a good time to do it, a couple of deals that we are have just closed or are very close to closing. So, and because these two in particular kind of talk about the depth of and breadth of what we can really provide. So the first one I'd like to mention is we are currently working on something that should close in just a few weeks. It's in a Western state. It's a publicly traded company, and they need some funds to purchase a piece of real estate, and then they have very large R&D budgets going forward because of the type of business they do. Well, you know, one of the many things that lenders pay attention to is not only the quality of the collateral that are being offered and the cash flow, but they're usually very, very picky about what the money is being used for. R&D is usually not one on the list of things that they like money to go.
I mean, the ROI is uncertain and often far off in the timeline, right?
And it can be very difficult, but we are working with an excellent management team in this situation. It's not closed yet, and I certainly don't want to mention any names, but I'm far enough along that I feel that it will. But we've worked with one of our very most flexible lenders, and they have seen the value of providing the funds needed. I expect this to close in, maybe the $12 to $15 million range. And with competitive pricing and some warrants, that kind of thing, which is very appropriate for a publicly traded company. So we're really excited about that one. So that's kind of on the, say, larger scale, okay? Because we're not going to get involved in these $50 million transactions, that kind of thing. Those borrowers don't need us, okay? They have corporate staff. They have this, a lot of the same connections that we may have, okay? So we are on a little smaller scale, but certainly on a sophisticated level. But then on the other side, and size-wise, and just the issues involved, we just closed a deal for just about $1 million. And what happened with that one is the borrower found their proposed lender kind of on their own. I didn't even know this was going on. I didn't know these people even at the point. And I always warn against that. I always feel like, you know, people are like, yeah, this is her self-interest and warning, but this is a good example of what can happen. The lender reneged on the transaction 2 days before closing.
Classic. And,
in the meantime, the borrower had made certain financial commitments on the other side for the use of the funds, and they were just stuck. And so they contacted me through a referral through their, I believe, their attorney. And we ended up closing on the amount of money they were looking for within 2 weeks. And the way we did that was we provided a smaller amount of real estate transaction through a lender that I know who's very good execution for this size of a transaction. And then we were able to layer on a separate term loan that was basically based on the financial strength of the owners or the sponsors. So cobbled together, it was about the same amount of money. And it probably was at better interest rates overall when you average the two together than they would have gotten through that single source. And just think about the time they would have saved had they gone to me, you know. But luckily, we were able to get it done quickly. So those, I think, are two those are two of the best examples I have, because you show the small, the big, the bad, the ugly, the great, the more formative ones. You've got everything.
Oh, I agree. And I think it's interesting that you chose these ones, right? I was going to ask you, like, I was going through your website and I was going to ask you about the first, or what seems to be the first seven digit, transaction that you did with Inkster Pine Park.
Right.
I felt like, okay, this is obviously the one you want to highlight.
Story as well. I mean, if we have a minute, what happened with them is we financed about 2 years ago, we did a construction loan to build their facility. Okay. And the facility has been doing that. They're doing well, all of that kind of thing. And they're at a point that, at least in my mind, that was a relatively high priced vehicle. It was never meant to be a long-term vehicle. And I felt that they could really get better pricing and refinance it at a lower interest rate. And in fact, that's what we were able to do for them. We also added on a little bit of working capital financing. Again, that's a difficult thing sometimes for lenders to do. So that one was a really nice one too. I could have talked about that one to begin with, but I thought this one was kind of, but yeah, very happy with that transaction too. And there we kind of show our relationship approach. You know, we're looking at holistically over a period of time in terms of what's best for the client.
And I think it's super interesting too, right? That the ones you highlighted, right? Most lenders out there, most investors are hesitant, you know, of working with these younger, smaller cannabis companies, funding them. Why is that? You operate under a different understanding, a different logic, if you will?
Yeah. I mean, I've always been a big American entrepreneurship. And that spans a lot of kinds of companies. You could have a mom and pop company, you could have a small startup, but in the general scheme of things, you know, I see some of these startups, they've raised a substantial amount of money, you know. But we can play anywhere in that realm, depending on the type of need that they have. Okay. But if somebody has a very good business plan, a good management team, and is realistic about what they expect to get equity markets, it's something that can be done on a whole variety of different sizes. And I would say we don't have really any really mature companies we're working with, but those are far and few between in the cannabis industry anyway, right? I mean, a long history of some of these companies, like 8 years, which compare that to one of the old school, like a steel manufacturer, automotive, and it's like a startup. So they're all kind of new.
How do the smaller ones, though, like the newer ones, remain competitive in this market, in this legal landscape, right? As other bigger companies continue to consolidate?
Well, first of all, it certainly depends on what state they're operating in, right? I mean, if you're in a new state or you're considering going into a new state such as New York or New Jersey, you're going to have a lot of low-hanging fruit for a while where you can get your feet on the ground. I'm speaking more as a grower right now. Capture some of those higher prices until things start to fall. That certainly happened out in Colorado, for example, and is starting to happen here in Michigan. So you've got that. So that's timing, okay? Not so much size of company. But I think in general, there's almost every industry that's out there has two paths for companies in general. You've got the big multinationals, and then you have smaller boutique type firms. I mean, think about, you've got big pharma, okay, and then you have these companies that are very fairly recent and vintage. Maybe they only have one or two products, but they're relatively small. Sometimes they get purchased by somebody else, but that's a good thing usually for the owners. And I always say that I've never worked with anybody in cannabis yet who says that they want to pass the business on to their grandchildren. Most of them are thinking of exiting sometime in the foreseeable future.
It is what it is. Judy, thank you so much for joining us. Judy Rinkus is a founder and principal of Seed to Sale Funding. I'm sure we'll see you again soon. Hope to see you in Miami next week at Benzinga Cannabis Conference.
I will be there.
Yes, definitely. You will.
Great.
We'll have a blast then.
Okay. Sounds
Judy,
great.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day. Thanks.
Moving on. No time to waste. We have another super interesting guest today. Second guest of the show at Benzinga Cannabis Insider is Suntree's Managing Director, Kevin McLaughlin. Let's bring him on. There you go. Kevin, welcome to Benzinga Cannabis Insider. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. Again, let's get right into it. No time to waste. Time is money, and this show is all about money. Kevin, tell us about Suntree.
Sure. Yeah. So we're a accounting advisory firm. We don't do any audit or tax. We're big enough where we can help, you know, emerging startups within the cannabis space, but then also we're able to help, much larger companies, publicly traded companies. Companies looking to go IPO or do some type of M&A, again, providing IPO readiness, financial statement preparation, any type of valuation work, risk advisory, essentially helping companies through some type of transaction from an accounting accounting and finance perspective.
What's a typical day like for you? Personally and in working with a company, what is the typical, if there's such a thing, right? The typical sort of interaction with a company, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Every day is a little different, right? That's how you keep it exciting. But, client comes to you and says, hey, we're thinking about doing some type of, capital raise, whether it's convertible debt or something like that. And they come with a term sheet and you guide them through potential accounting issues and things like that, or, potential LOI and work through impact from an accounting finance standpoint. So really any way we can act as an advisor, whether it's guiding them through, an LOI or some type of preliminary document or, actual operationally type helping them through things. So there's never a dull day. So I don't know if there's a typical day, but anyway.
Introducing Under Armour's Infinity High Sports Bra. Its ergonomic design is molded to support the natural movement of your body. With cord-out padding, the better breathability eliminates extra bulk without sacrificing support. And quick-dry padding is Under Armour's fastest-drying padding yet. When you're lifting heavy, running fast, and pushing yourself further than ever before, you need a bra that will help you go that extra mile and make you feel your best. Shop the Infinity High Sports Bra now at UA.com.
Karen is the proven expert in addiction treatment. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen,
Real results, real care, real about recovery.
Way that we can advise our clients through, you know, helping them grow their business, you know, within this very emerging industry.
Growing the business and raising money are all, always like top of mind concerns for cannabis businesses nowadays and since like the beginning of the industry. But there doesn't seem to be one answer, right? There's no one answer on how to structure a deal. Is there such a thing as it relates to size, right? Is there a preferred or ideal deal structure for different size companies? Whether like if you're a small company, should you pursue and determine, you know, method versus bigger companies? What do you see there?
No, I don't think so. I think what you're seeing a little bit more so, and it's evident with a lot of the deals that have happened, is, you know, there's not as much, you know, equity capital that's being raised to help support those deals. We're seeing a lot of debt that's being raised, you know, structure, you know, in the past, you know, probably 2 years plus or so, most deals were all, you know, all stock deals. You're still seeing that. There's some form of different types of compensation, but I think it's evolved over time as the equity markets have changed. And, you know, you look at the Cresco and Columbia Care deal, I think that's a good example of a transaction that, you know, those companies really complement each other very nicely. It's really exciting and whatnot. And I think as you see that come together, there's going to be, you know, a lot of, you know, really exciting things, you know, happening. They're going to streamline operations. I think the costs associated with building out like a high growth cannabis business, there's a lot of opportunity there. Their governance and executive management teams are going to be really important, right? They've been through their fair amount of M&A over the past few years separately. So bringing those teams together, I think that's a good way to kind of maneuver deals where you have management teams that have been through the ringer, right? And they understand what the integration is pre-merger, post-merger, having a good timeline of what it, you know, realistic timeline of getting a deal done. I mean, it's certainly very at the very early stages, but, you know, I think that's a good example of one. And it's certainly been very, you know, all over the news the last couple of weeks here.
You know, you're in my mind bringing up Cresco and Columbia Care, right? For those who are not aware, this combination was valued at $2.1 billion. Can you explain a little bit about how it was structured? And the reason why I ask this, right, is because that must tell you something about the current state of the market and the near future of the market, right? The way this deal was structured. So first, how was it structured? And then, you know, what does it tell you specifically?
Well, I think the way that it's structured, it is similar to other deals, but as you're seeing with some of these new states come on, that's a little bit of a different layer in that as part of this proposed transaction, there's going to need to be some divestitures that's happening, right? So both Cresco and Columbia are going to need to divest some assets in order to really comply with, you know, state regulatory requirements. Obviously, with New York coming on here, there's, and again, this is presumably in the process. It sounds like, you know, from some things I've read that, you know, they're gonna be, you know, getting rid of some quote unquote redundant type assets. So, you know, you look at New York. The thought is that Cresco is going to get rid of, you know, somewhere from 200 to 500 million worth of cultivation, you know, and retail licenses just to meet the state license limits, right? Given the, you know, how the state, you know, state's laws. And then likely need to gonna divest some assets in, you know, Florida, Illinois, you know, maybe Ohio, just because of the overlapping operations of Columbia Care, that, you know, in those states where there's limited license markets and requirements. So I think that's something to think about as more deals, you know, come about, that there needs to be the time on the front end put into how that plays out, mm-hmm. as part of a pending merger to getting a deal closed. But I mean, if you think about this deal, it's pretty unbelievable. I mean, I think after the deal, it'd be in 17 states, something like that, and I think Washington D.C. So,
yeah, so.
A huge mix of markets too. You're going to have what we'll call like legacy markets, like California, Colorado, but then also, you know, they're going to have, you know, they're going to be in markets like Illinois, and some really important states on the Northeast, Jersey, New York, Virginia. They're going to have very good operations and have a hold on those markets, and really a tremendous amount of potential in other markets that are soon going to be, you know, the thought is soon going to be gearing towards adult use. PA, they're going to have, you know, a huge presence there. Florida, really competitive, but, you know, obviously, you know, we know about that. And then Maryland. So kind of putting themselves in a very good position from that perspective, and wouldn't be surprised as this, you know, gets to the point where it closes, is, yeah, they're going to try to grow organically, but there's likely going to be continued M&A as part of their story. I would, you know, one would think.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, another thing to think about is branding. So many of these MSOs spend a lot of time on branding, right? It's a big part they do. And as part of the merger here, you have, I think both Cresco and Columbia will need to align on what their approach is. Cresco's got Sunnyside. I know Columbia Care just rebranded some stores, right? So post-merger, how does that play out down the road? I think it'll be interesting to see, right? What has the most value, all those types of things. And like I said, it's been a key area of focus for MSOs. So how do these two brands that certainly have some value on their own come together and form, whether it's a new brand or, you know, stay with one or both of the existing brands we'll see.
Definitely is challenging. By the way, people in the chat, I see the chat is quiet today. 61 Annie's there, Born to Be Free. You know, drop some questions. Take advantage of the fact that we have Kevin here. If you want to ask him anything, it's now or never. I actually have one last question I want to ask you. And it's, you know, we've seen a lot of cannabis companies go public, IPO over the years, mostly out of need, out of a lack of access, you know, for traditional financing. But, you know, nowadays that things have changed, when should a cannabis company go public, and when shouldn't it go public, right? Because we can't default to public markets just because it's like, okay, I need to raise money, I'll default to an IPO. Mm-hmm. That is not a sign of a mature market, which is now the case for cannabis.
Yeah, I mean, I think every company has to evaluate where they are, whether if you're looking at companies that are in Canada and they want to do some type of cross-border deal, and they think if they're able to raise money that, you know, makes sense at an attractive price. I mean, right now we know where some of the trading levels are of cannabis stocks, and hasn't been fantastic over the last year or so. So really, I think it's a matter of timing where the markets are, but being comfortable where you are in terms of scaling, you know, scaling your business where it's profitable. I mean, if you look at some of these MSOs and larger cannabis companies today, you know, you're seeing legitimate businesses that are generating operating cash flow. Some of the larger ones are reporting net income or getting to that point where they're approaching net income, which is, you know, fantastic, and giving investors something really to point to where you can say, okay, we can build off of this and feel comfortable that these operations are going to grow with the thought in mind of becoming one of these large players. So I think it's getting your ducks in a row and being able to feel like you're a strong operating company and not just going out and, you know, becoming a public company, because that's the only way to raise capital. Has to make sense for all investors internally. And that, you know, at certain points in time, that's what companies had to do. But I think the market has matured. There's access to, like we talked about, I think, given where the state of the equity markets is, debt has been readily available, you know, over the last year or so. So you don't have to necessarily go that, you know, the route of an IPO or some, you know, one of those types of routes where you can raise, you know, capital through debt. You're not going to dilute, your shareholders and whatever your existing cap table is. So I guess it's a combination of things, but, you know, waiting till you're at that inflection point where it makes sense from a shareholder standpoint.
Oh yeah, no, it's one of those things with money where it's like you should be doing things because you can and not because you need to, right? You want to raise money when you can in good conditions, not because you need to. You want to go public because the environment is ripe, not because you need to, not because you have no other option. But right. Having said this, you know what? Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I would love to have you again very soon and just like continue to discuss markets. I had a lot more questions, like many more questions that I wanted to ask. But Kevin, where can people find you and ask you some of these questions as well?
Well, listen, I'll be at the conference next week. So anybody who's at the conference, we're going to have a booth, stop by. I'll be walking around with some of my colleagues and, feel free to link up before that. Looking forward to seeing everybody next week at the conference.
Yes, sir. We will see you there and have a blast. Kevin McLaughlin from Suntree, thank you so much for joining us at Benzinga Cannabis Insider.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Before we leave, a quick reminder again, bzcannabis.com. Benzinga is coming to Miami April 19th. We're doing a Psychedelics Capital Conference. April 20th and 21st, we're doing the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference, 14th edition, the biggest and best you've seen so far. Probably the best cannabis and finance event in the world. The best, if you know what I mean. We have some of the top speakers from Representative Nancy Mace to, you know, CEOs, Tim Seymour, Mike Tyson. We have Bernard delivering some very cool thoughts. We have Tilray CEO Erwin Simon. If I have to go off the top of my mind, I just won't remember every one of them. So let's go to bzcannabis.com. Aaron, can we bring up the website real fast before we leave? I don't mind we're going over time. I just want to brag a little bit. Maybe not. I don't know. Well, I'll tell you a little bit more about some other speakers that we have on in the conference. We have Boris Jordan. He's the executive chairman of the board at Curaleaf. Erwin Simon, of course. Kim Rivers, CEO of Trulieve. David Klein, CEO of Canopy Growth Corporation. Jason Weil of JW Asset Management. Ricky Sandler, you should know him. I don't need to introduce him, but Eminence Capital. Miguel Martin, CEO of Aurora Cannabis. We have Adam Wilkes from Tyson 2.0. Ric Flair, professional wrestler. TJ Cole from Cresco Labs. Aaron Miles from Verano. Troy Datcher from The Pairing Company. I mean, over 120 speakers from all walks of life. I'm blown away. What can I say? Come join us. Be there or be square. See you, Miami. That's all I have for today. See you Thursday, also 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, for another episode of Benzinga Cannabis Insider. Peace out.
Home. They say it's where the heart is. They also say it's wherever you make it. They don't say. It's where you unload your stuff, get tired halfway through unpacking, use some boxes as furniture, realize your oven mitt's in a box that doubles as a nightstand, don't want to buy a new nightstand, and use a towel as an oven mitt instead. But no matter where you call home, Geico makes it easy to bundle and save on renters and car insurance. Easier than grabbing a piping hot pan with a towel that's a bit too thin and trying to quickly get it to the counter. Ooh, hot, 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 hot.
When your life depends on it, when everything is on the line, you've got to get real about addiction treatment. Only Caron offers 65 years of medical expertise in evidence-based treatment with real, proven results. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Caron patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. So if you're ready for something real, visit caron.org/real today. Caron. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.